Now, the concept of conditionality, or conditioned co-production, as it's more generally called by writers on Buddhism in English, has quite a number of different formulations. Some of these formulations are simple and some are complex. The simplest formulation is a purely abstract one. This is the basic formulation, we may say, at least in conceptual terms, and it runs like this. A, being present, B arises. In the absence of A, B does not arise. That's the fundamental principle. That's Buddhism in a nutshell. If anyone asks you for Buddhism in a nutshell, and they don't want it in one word, because that word would be conditionality, they want it just in a couple of phrases, a couple of sentences, just tell them A, being present, B arises. In the absence of A, B does not arise. That's the essence of Buddhism, and let them work it out for themselves. Yeah? Because if they're sufficiently intelligent, they could. It's all there. But, I mean, the Buddha had to make a few concessions. He had to explain it in rather more detail. And probably the best known formulation of the principle, the concept of conditionality, is that of the Four Noble Truths, about which we heard quite a lot yesterday. That is to say, the truths of suffering or unsatisfactoriness, of the cause of suffering or unsatisfactoriness, which is craving, the truth of the cessation of suffering or unsatisfactoriness, that cessation being equivalent to nirvana, and the truth of the way leading to the cessation of suffering or unsatisfactoriness, the way leading to nirvana. In other words, in terms of this formulation, craving being present, suffering arises. Craving not being present, suffering does not arise. Here the suffering that does not arise is mental suffering. Yeah? You can have physical suffering. Even the Buddha could hurt his foot. In fact, Devadatta wounded the foot of the Buddha with a splinter of rock, and the Buddha suffered pain. There's also a passage in the Pali Canon. One of my own teachers, Bhikkhu Kassapa, with whom I studied Pali and Abhidhamma, was very fond of referring to this passage. In this passage, the Buddha is teaching his disciples. And he's seated cross-legged, he teaches a long time, and his back starts aching. Even a Buddha's back aches. The Buddha's back started aching. So Sariputta happened to be there. And, the Buddha didn't just grin and bear it, as some teachers might say that we ought to. The Buddha said, "Sariputta, my back is aching. Please take over the teaching, I'll just lie down." So my teacher Kashyapji used to be very fond of referring to this incident because, as he emphasized, it illustrated the humanity of the Buddha. Not humanity in the sense that the Buddha had human weaknesses in the mental or emotional sense. The Buddha didn't have those. But he had physical weaknesses. He had an ordinary human body. And that body, as he grew older, suffered. And he felt the pain. So we make a distinction in Buddhism between physical pain and mental pain. Mental pain. I did promise not to introduce Pali or Sanskrit. But anyway, the Pali for the mental pain is Dhammanasa. So there is a distinction between physical pain and mental pain. When you gain enlightenment, there's no mental pain. There's no emotional pain, turbulence, or anything of that sort. But there may be physical pain. But if you're enlightened, you bear the physical pain, as the Buddha bore it, with equanimity, we're taught. Anyway, that's by the way. Craving not being present, suffering, mental suffering, avoidable suffering, does not arise. Now, incidentally, this is not to say that suffering being present, craving must have arisen. It's very important to grasp this distinction. It's not to say that suffering being present, craving must have arisen, because this would amount to karmic determinism. There are some sufferings that are not due, especially physical sufferings, that are not due to your previous unskillful mental actions, whether in this life or in any previous life.